Welcome to another session of Gospel Entrepreneurs. It's great that you're with us again. I'm thrilled to have a really old friend of mine who we've known, I don't know how many years, Paul, but I think it's probably 35 years, maybe even more. I don't know. Paul Harvey is with us. He's a lawyer. He won a very successful practice, and he's gospel front and center. So I'm really thrilled that today I've got Paul Harvey sharing with us. Welcome, Paul.
Hello, Roy. It's good to be with you today. I think it's 40 years.
It
won't be 40 years. Yeah, or thereabouts. Yeah.
And you live in Surrey, in Morden, don't you?
That's right, on the outskirts of London, S19.
And Paul, we've known each other a long time, but I remember a particular time when you were kind of looking at developing as a lawyer and solicitor, but you were living with a real dilemma and tension because you were also a leader in a Baptist church or on the leadership team or eldership or diaconate of that Baptist church. And there was a real conflict theologically, but also practically, that you were grappling with, that I think a lot of people in the marketplace and in kind of setting up a new business or a new venture can struggle with. Give us a bit of that journey, Paul, that you walked through there.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I grew up in the church that until very, very recently, I've been a member of, so 64 odd years. Great sense of loyalty and commitment to my local church. My grandparents had served there, my parents, and we had a long line of service in the local church. And yeah, I had, right from very young, I wanted to be a lawyer, and not quite sure how that was all going to fit together. I mean, lawyers don't have a fantastic reputation, wrongly. But I grew up wanting to be a lawyer, but also a great commitment to the local church. And I think the way I saw it as I was sort of coming out of university and starting work was that I always saw that my work would serve my ministry in the local church. That was the way round it was going to be for me. I made career decisions very, very early on that were based upon being free to be fully committed to my local church and to serving God there. To such an extent that when I went for an interview for the firm that I've recently retired from, I told them that this was never going to be the most important thing in my life. And bizarrely, they still gave me the job. And started work. But I was with the same firm and up to retirement for 34 years. So I'm quite a loyal sort of chap. So yeah, I had this tension within me of wanting to serve God, feeling that the place to serve him was in the local church, and yet quite ambitious in terms of my career and wanting to develop that career. So I was involved in various positions of leadership within the church, became a deacon at a very early age. It's a Baptist church, then an elder by the time I was 27, was involved in leading the youth work, was preaching very regularly, all sorts of stuff going on in the local church, and somehow fitting in a bit of work around that as well.
Because we did youth work together. I mean, I remember that was, we had some amazing moments where you were the youth leader, brought your group, and we saw change lives. It was fantastic to partner with you on some of that. But yeah, you were doing all of that at a very young age.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I think that's where we actually met, wasn't it? On a campaigner camp at Cliff College. And yeah, I loved it and really enjoyed it, and changing lives and feeling that we were doing something that was really of value to the kingdom of God. And I suppose not really seeing that what I was doing from Monday, Friday in the same sort of way, I suppose, and feeling that I really came to feel, one of the things that really struck me later on was that when I look back, I can see that what I was doing in the church was almost legitimizing what I was doing in the workplace, that there was this sort of sacred secular divide, which isn't of God. I mean, it's definitely not of God, because there just is not that divide. And it all came to a crunch back in sort of 2008, really, where I was about to be re-elected, but I don't know, it must be the third or fourth time, as an elder of the church. And God really challenged me through a number of people, including yourself, Roy, about this whole balance in my life, I suppose, and whether or not I'd got that balance right, and whether or not I was You know, I told people, you know, I'll never forget, there was one occasion when the partners in my firm were talking about retirement, and they said, well, Paul won't retire with us. You know, that's funny how things played out, but Paul won't retire with us because sooner or later he'll find out what he really wants to do with his life. That's what they actually said. And they didn't see me that being there long term. And it all came to a head in 2008. And when I was due to be re-elected, and God really spoke to me in an amazing way about the stewardship of my life, about whether I was making the best of the gifts that I had, whether I was taking opportunities that were to widen the sphere of my influence, whether I was had a very narrow approach to how God would use me. And yet I had this sort of ongoing loyalty and commitment to the church. And I had a conversation with you at that time. I went to hear Ken Costa preach. I had an amazing sort of conversation, which was like a Kairos moment, with a young lady solicitor in my firm who said that she'd left church because she didn't feel that the church really valued what she did as a young lawyer at that stage. And all these things sort of came together. God spoke to me through Philippians 3, when it says, I press on to take hold of that for which Christ has taken hold of me. And Chaz, what is it that Christ has really taken hold of me for? Is it for this ongoing ministry in the local church, continue that? Or is he got something else in store for me? And over a period, it's only 8 or 9 days, back in June of 2008, I came to the conclusion, yes, I was limiting God. And I couldn't go forward any further with the same level of involvement in the local church, because that was going to limit what God would do with me and through me if I threw myself into a commitment to see my work as being my primary, my number one ministry. So there's this huge turnaround came, and it was just God really spoke to me really, really clearly about it, because I think I had this sort of holy discontent, I think, at the time as well. I felt there's got to be more than what I'm doing right now. And the incredible thing was, at that stage, yes, I was an equity sort of profit-sharing partner in my firm. But within 3 months of that decision, and not in a way that I had expected, I'd become managing partner of the firm. And it just seemed an amazing thing that, you know, God spoke to me about this. I'd made this change of heart, change of commitment, and redirection in seeing my work as being my number one, laying aside some of my major responsibilities to the local church. And then God opened up the opportunity to become managing partner. And it was an amazing journey. And wow, you know, boy, did my influence increase and opportunities open up to me that would never have happened if I hadn't made that switch in my mindset about what it means to be a minister. Because I think so often it's regarded as, you know, the ministers, those who are employed by the church Monday to Friday, and then their job actually is to equip us to do the ministry in the workplace. And that's where the switch came in my mind back in 2008, and the journey began.
And it was a real dilemma for you, wasn't it? Because you were even thinking, I remember you saying this, people that really serve Jesus go full time in a ministry role.
Yeah.
And how can you really serve Jesus as a full-time lawyer? Hey, and that was a real dilemma for you, wasn't it? Because it was like you're almost seen as second class. I understand what I'm saying. You're almost seen as lesser in your commitment to Christ, when actually that frontline role in what you're doing could have a far greater influence in that space or in that sphere.
Yeah.
And sometimes the church pastor can say, well, why are you not turning up at the church meeting or these meetings, when actually the space you're in is having a greater influence? And that must have been a real dilemma for you, because you were church leader, elder, kind of saying, we need to commit to this. That was a cataclysmic change in your thinking that then rolled out in your behavior, didn't it?
Oh yeah, it was. I mean, and there were so many loyalties, and yeah, this, you grow up with this belief, I think, that sort of, you know, those that work in the church are those that are really called by God. They're the really anointed ones. They're the ones that God has really got his hand on, and that, you know, all the rest of us are there to sort of almost support that. And you know, I always made it my thing that I would support the minister of my church. I've always done that and been very loyal about that. And you know, the minister at the time was one of my closest friends, still is. And he was absolutely brilliant, actually, about this. When I shared with him, and the funny thing is, I mentioned the verse in Philippians 3, because because you're such a close friend, when God was really speaking to me, I said that, you know, I laid down a fleece before God on the Sunday that this all happened. And I said, look, if this is of you, God, I wanted to come out of his mouth, of Gavin's mouth. And sure enough, it did. That verse of Philippians 3 really did. And I went to, well, you know, you said it, that God confirmed it through you to me this morning. So it was cataclysmic. And I've never forgotten, though, that there was a church meeting called when all the church came together thinking they were going to vote to re-elect me or not as an elder. And I stood in front of the church that day, and I told them what had happened and said, I'm not going to be putting my name forward for re-election tonight. And when I went and sat down in my seat, I felt God say to me almost audibly, you will not be disappointed about this. You know, you think you've let go of something huge, but actually I've got something far greater in store for you. And true to his word, that's proved to be the case. I've never looked back on that because of the way things opened up to me after that.
Yeah, because you're an effective leader and you kind of thought, well, I'm laying down that leadership role and influence and ever. Tell us a bit of the story. Obviously became leading partner. Give us a bit of that story and how recognizing your calling to be a lawyer and to move this company from here to here. How did that come about? How did you move into that space? You must have felt, hey, this is now God's calling on my life, so I can throw myself into it in the sense of I don't have to look at something else that is my calling. This is it, so I can really focus.
I think you're absolutely right, Roy, about that, is that, you know, I did feel a real sense, because this all happened before the opportunity opened up, and that I'd made that decision. I felt, well, this is it. This is now it. And, you know, even to the extent that somebody talked to me, and some of them have issues with this, but they said, you know, my firm is my church now. And that's where I minister. And that's the people that God has given me responsibility over to lead. And I just felt an amazing sense of calling to it. And that stayed with me all the way through to when I retired, that great sense which God, and that helps in so many ways, doesn't it? Because, you know, you do then seek to bring into your business the values. And I still think the Bible is the best management consultancy book ever written. That if you want to know how to run a business, then read the Bible, because it gives you everything you need, or all the values you need, or the direction, the wisdom that you need to run a business. And so I sought to bring in my values, and there was all sorts of, I suppose, opportunities I opened up to pray for people, to share my story with people, and I increased the sphere of my influence. I still am chair of the Business Improvement District in Wimbledon, where you're leading the businesses in the town centre, going to a function with them this afternoon. And you saw that all of these opportunities opened up, which wouldn't have been there if I hadn't seized hold of it. So yeah, that great sense of calling was what propelled me into the role. And to want to grow the business. Yeah, you sometimes struggle with that, but I wanted to grow the business. I wanted to employ more people. I wanted to increase the influence, I suppose, of my business. So we grew in terms of size, we grew in terms of the geography that we covered, and we grew substantially in terms of our reputation within the sort of legal community as well. So all of those ways, because I was ambitious for the firm as well.
Yeah, and I think it's also a sign of God's favour that lawyer thing was in you, so you'd actually found your sweet spot. And God had said, it's okay, that, you know, that's what I've given you. You're kind of, it was right in you at the start. Why do you think I would then want you to do something else? But you also had a massive gospel influence, because when somebody, I think it was a death pool, wasn't it, in one of your partners or something, and you offered to pray because you felt, hey, I'm a Christian and this is how I would deal with the pain and grief of that. So you brought a gospel value into your role of leadership there, didn't it?
Yeah, there were a couple, there were two or three things like that. One was, as you mentioned, a tragedy occurred within the firm where the 19-year-old daughter of one of my partners took her own life. And I had to share the news with the whole firm. And I went around the day it happened to each of our offices and told the staff about it. And then at the end of it said, you know, I'm a Christian. My response to this situation is to want to pray and reach out to God. If you want to join me in doing that, then stay where we are now and we'll pray, or God will go off into another room and pray. And at each of the locations, people came and joined me to pray, including people of other faiths wanted to be in that situation and pray. There was another quite remarkable situation where the practice director of our firm, a lovely lady called Jill, I'm still friends with, her husband died after a long battle with cancer, and she had a meeting with the local vicar and didn't take to him very warmly. He came into work the next day and said, would you conduct Keith's funeral? So I ended up conducting a funeral at Crawley Crematorium for Keith. And obviously that was another opportunity where I stepped forward. And I suppose I saw the firm as my people, my flock, and therefore God had given me a partial responsibility. I remember another situation whereby, you know, a lot of this happened at the time of the credit crunch and the recession that followed that. And we had to make redundant a small team of people. And you know, in the end, they volunteered for redundancy and said to me, we know that this is more difficult for you than it is for us. And yet they were the ones that were losing their jobs. And I think there were those sort of situations where you look back and you think, you can see God's hand of blessing on what we were doing, and particularly guiding us through some quite challenging times as well.
And I think it's, you know, for anybody listening to this or a leader in business, or if you're the owner, as you were, the lead partner, you can have influence with a gospel. I mean, you've got to be wise, obviously, Paul, and I'm sure you were. But there are moments where God provides, are you going to reveal my value in this? Or are you going to just treat it like everybody else would treat it? And I think that's the distinctive that we as Christian leaders and gospel people would bring into that setting, isn't it?
Yeah, and I can remember having a conversation with one of my partners a little while ago. I can't even remember what the issue was, but I'd sort of made clear my view on it, and it was quite, I suppose, somewhat different to the view that others might have adopted. And he just turned to me and said, that's why you're so respected here, because we appreciate the values that you have. And yeah, I mean, I think that's right. I just really felt that the opportunity there to live out my faith in my workplace was amazing.
Yeah, and even the values on strategy and thinking and honouring people and doing things right, the credibility of a business like that, I think in the end, generates its success. I think there's something around that that God has ordained. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, well, you know, I don't, even if you're not the boss, you can bring those values in the space that you serve. It says serve as to the Lord, doesn't it? So actually, there are certain things that God would want us to do in that space. Or if you're an entrepreneur starting out, get those values in place. Wouldn't that be what you would say? Because you obviously took it over when it was quite small. And in the end, when you left, I think there were, it was a bigger practice and lots more people, but you put those things in place at the start, didn't you?
I think, yeah, I did a lot of work around our values and in actually documented, talking about them and documenting them. Because I believe that if you're particularly in a growing business, you can't control how people are going to behave at any particular moment of time. But if they actually embrace your values, if they know what those values are, if they're really clearly laid out, then they will determine the way that they respond at any particular time, and they will do the right thing. And there were loads of examples where I saw that. And over a period of time, initially, you're very, very hands-on, but as a business grows, you have to become more and more hands-off and delegate to people. And so, you know, I'd sit back and watch people doing things, And because I know that they were embracing the values that we had. I mean, it's a very long, it wasn't a new business. It's a very old established law firm, but it did, we did grow quite substantially during that period. And a lot of these things had never been embraced. I used to talk about team all the time. Nobody in law firms talks about team. They talk about departments or sections or whatever, or business units. But I used to talk about team because one of the things that I was really passionate about was building a collegiate and cohesive and supportive environment where people supported each other. And in the end, that was embraced by everybody.
And that's probably, I mean, it's a biblical framework, but it's probably what you did in the local church as a model that you're learning as a 27-year-old or as a 30-year-old. That was what you built there. So that was what you knew as well, wasn't it? So it was natural for you to bring out of that space into that space what you would do, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, you know, I really believe that, you know, I am Paul. Whether I'm a leader in the local church or whether I'm a leader in business, I'm the same person. I don't suddenly take on a different persona in one situation or another. And similarly, the gifts that God has given me, I use in both situations. They're not just for use on a Sunday morning, you know, worship service. You know, God gave me vision and this, I suppose, the entrepreneurial spirit. And people acknowledge that in the local church. And I suddenly thought, God's made me like that, then I can use those gifts. I can use the way God has created me in a business situation as well. And I felt very much that certainly I'd learned so much through that early life involvement in the local church that I took with me into business, the experiences that I had, the mistakes that I'd made. I'm very grateful to our local church for putting up with it, really, because I think I learned an awful lot there that then you applied later on in my business life.
And it's a kingdom view, isn't it? It's recognizing, hey, the local church is significant, but it's a kingdom that we're about, which means that we need to influence business, commerce, every area of society. And I think what you're saying is, hey, I did that, but I was released to do that more in a business marketplace setting. Paul, we're kind of coming into land, and people may have heard your story and be thinking about, hey, how does that influence on me? What do I need to do? What steps do I need to take? How do I do that? Obviously, you're now retired, quote unquote. You had an amazing, successful business, but also a success in serving Jesus in that space, in what you did, and the influence you had on others was amazing. What would you say as your final words that have listened to this podcast today and heard some of your story, Paul?
I suppose it's, you know, what has God put in your hand? What are the opportunities that God has given? Where has he placed you? And where can God actually use you best? Where would be the place where you could be most effective? And I think sometimes we just have to accept that there are only 24 hours in a day. There are only so many opportunities that we have. And are we making the most use? As you challenged me back in 2008 about the use of my talents and my stewardship of that, I've challenged the people who are listening to think, well, you know, am I making the best use of what's given me, what he's put in my hand? Is there a better way? I hope that my story helps some who might be struggling with this, I said a word, is secular sacred divide, which doesn't exist, because we are the same person, and God gifts us in all these situations. You know, is there something that's holding me back from really going for it and investing more, I suppose? Because, you know, the thing that strikes me is, you know, if you've got 100 people sitting together in a service on Sunday morning and they each go out and meet 100 people in the week, that's 10,000 people. That they're going to, what number? Yeah, 10,000 if you've got the number north. But that's 10,000 people that they can influence in a week. And therefore, this sort of spreading of gospel values and the good news comes best when I think we take hold of the everyday opportunities that God has given us just to share his love with those that God puts us in touch with.
Paul, thanks so much for joining me today. It's been great to hear your story and to connect with you.
Thanks, Roy. Really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Paul, for joining us. It's been great to get something of Paul's story. And you may have listened today and just thought, I need to really find out more or connect more. Do leave a note on wherever you've listened to this. Give us some feedback. We'd love that. But it's been great having you with us. This has been our podcast between Revelation Trust and UCB. Thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.